The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR show. Really cool dude coming on the show this week. Irish guy. I used to be in a band called The Almighty in Thin Lizzy. Got a new solo record out. Just a really cool dude with some fun stories. And I'll tell you this, his first drug story might be one of my favorites of all time. I've told about 40 people the story after hearing it because it's just a really good story. Every Wednesday, every Saturday, we are doing the show 9 p.m. Eastern time. And for another couple of weeks, if you subscribe at gasdigitalnetwork.com and use the code SDR, you'll get a two-week free trial. Starting in April, it goes down to a 1 week. So now's the time to go in, check it out, pull up all the old episodes, and listen to any one of the other 21 shows on the network. Working on one more. I'm hoping that it comes through. It's a really cool one if it does come through. But right now, here it is, the Ricky Warwick episode of The SDR Show. Boop.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is the hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's weed, I'm beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's fart. You need to know.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, longtime co-host of the show, it is James Madden. How are you, buddy?
Oh, man, I'm getting emotional. That's the first time you refer to me in that vein. I might have to, like take a moment, buddy.
Let's spend a moment before we bring on our guests and everything. How do you feel about my new background?
Your background is spectacular. I feel like you're a superhero, but you're like you go behind there and you come out as like a super geisha,
If I get like a naked girl to dance behind it, that would be cool. I also feel like it's going to fall on me at some point throughout the show. That's what I think is going to happen.
Well, that builds drama.
That would be exciting. And then Shannon has a kind of a new angle as well. Look at that, Shannon. Your room looks cleaner and nicer, a better angle for some reason.
Yeah, if only people knew that my ceiling was falling apart right behind it.
I know. I got a vision. I got to see that the other day. It's pretty cool. All right. So now, really excited to have this dude on. He's a singer, songwriter, lead singer of not only Thin Lizzy and Black Star Riders, but he's got now, I believe it's his fifth solo album, When Life Was Hard and Fast. It is Ricky Warwick. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
No worries. I like speaking of backgrounds, as we talked about it, I like your very effeminate turquoise pillows.
Thank you. Look, very rock and roll, right? Look at that.
Yeah. When life was hard and fast, but not the pillows.
But not with pillows. No, I've been relegated to the balcony here in my place. I've got wife working downstairs, two daughters homeschooling in the room. So I've been thrown out on the balcony.
Okay. Well, it does look very dignified, sir, if that's the best way to put it. So I'm going to start with where I first heard of you. Okay. I think it seems like a good place to start. Let's go back to the early 90s. I was a DJ at a rock club in New York called The Limelight. And then The Almighty's fourth record came out and you had that single Free and Easy. That was a staple for me back then. And then looking up back then we didn't have the interwebs. You would look bands up in like Hit Parader or whatever the fuck we would do back then and see you guys were from Ireland, which was like, wow, that's weird. You know, you don't really knew a lot of like rock bands from Ireland back then. So I think a good start to just kind of understand a little bit more about you, a Northern Ireland guy to come to America, get in a rock band. Like, how did that even happen? Especially if I'm not mistaken, at that time, it's not like a lot of rock bands were going to Northern Ireland.
Right. Well, I'm Northern Irish. The Almighty were actually Scottish. We were a Scottish band. So what happened was I moved over to Scotland when I was 15, blah, 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 formed a band. Man, it was, you know, we got a record deal. We signed to Polydor, which is part of Mercury and all that. And things just really took off. And next thing I knew, you know, the first album had come out. We're getting offers to go and play in the States. I think we even played the Limelight in New York City.
Yeah, you did. No, 100% you did. I remember it very well. Yeah.
You know, we played out at the...
By the way, Ricky, if you remember, I was the guy doing this. Woo! That was me.
Oh, man. I remember that show is we got into a huge fight with the security at the club after the show because we wanted to load our gear out and they had the club night on. They wouldn't let us load our gear out and it got ugly.
Really? They did? They just wouldn't let you do it? That's strange.
Yeah, wouldn't let us load out and we were just like, we want to get out of here, you know? And it got pretty ugly. But, you know, we were young.
That's funny. We were young. And that was, I guess, in the 91. It was 91.
It might even be earlier than that, Shannon. It might have been 89, 90.
Okay. I don't remember. I was there for about 2 years.
First record came out in 89. So, yeah, you know. But anyway, and yeah, so, yeah, just things just took off. There was a buzz about the band. We were just getting all these really cool tours offered to us. I'd always dreamed about playing in America. I'd been there 3 years previously. My first band was a band called New Model Army, a punk band. And I played guitar for them. And I did a tour, a seven-week tour of America way back in 87 with them when I was like 19, 20 years old. And that was my first ever experience in America. But we were kids growing up in Belfast. We'd so much American TV. It was like the holy grail for us as kids. You know, that's where we all wanted to aspire to get out of Northern Ireland and go to America because that's where it happened.
The Irish guy that I'm a big fan of is Damien Rice. Do you know him by any chance?
I don't know him. I certainly know of him. He's a great singer-songwriter.
Yeah, it's not really, this really type good. Of genre, but he's one of the few guys I went to see like four times every time he comes to the States. I love him. Makes me very light in the shoes. Is that what you're trying to say, James, by your face?
No, I'm just very shocked that came out of your mouth. I almost wore an Elton John shirt, and I'm wearing David Bowie and Labyrinth. So what am I going to judge you? I'm trying to Tori Amos still. What are we going to do? I'll go put my Dolly Parton shirt on right now to make you feel better.
Hey,
whatever
I'll give
you want.
Dolly Parton. I know the Dolly Parton will do. I'll talk Dolly Parton all day long. So anyway, Almighty continued to put out records up until like, what, 10 years ago? Is that about right?
Up until about 2001 was the last record.
I'm getting old. That's a long time ago. So the band doesn't really do anything anymore.
The band has been defunct for quite a while.
While. Okay. And then let's jump ahead to 2010, where one of the last remaining, I think maybe the last remaining original member of Thin Lizzy reaches out to you, Scott, and you end up joining Thin Lizzy.
Yeah, there was three guys. Brian Downey was also involved in that. He was the original drummer. And Darren Wharton, who'd been in the last two or three Lizzy albums. I'd known Scott for a while, Shannon, as a friend, and he played on one of my early solo records. And he called me up, and I was just expecting the phone call to be, hey, man, how's it going? What's going on? How's the family? And he drops a question. I'm putting Lizzy back together. I want you to sing. Yes, straight away.
Yeah.
Talked to him, put the phone down, and then went, fuck's sake, what have I done?
It'd be cool if he said, I want you to, and you just said yes right away. And he goes, what are my plans when I'm on the road? You're like, God damn it.
But yeah, you know, it was just a dream come true. Lizzy were my favorite band growing up as a kid in Ireland and still are. And, you know, as soon as I agreed to it, when I got off the phone with them, suddenly I was like, well, what the hell have I just taken on here? How am I going to do this? How am I going to do this justice? How am I going to, you know, how am I just going to get through this and make it work? And all those questions just were coming at me, but what an opportunity.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I forget who, but a couple of the Thin Lizzy guys were in this apartment where I do the show years ago on my radio show called The Tour Bus. And I forget who, because my memory does not work the way it used to, but years ago they came in. I mean, just, it's amazing to be a guy from Ireland and then play with probably, if not the biggest, depends if you want to argue them or you too, the biggest rock band to ever come out of Ireland is pretty crazy.
It was insane. And, you know, it was just such an honor and very humbling and just what an amazing experience. And to get to sing those amazing songs, it's like winning the musical lottery. It's really, really, really great.
Do you think you had an extra in because you're also Irish, so they feel like it wasn't that far of a stretch?
I'm sure that helped. Didn't do any harm.
And Thin Lizzy, technically, you're still the singer of Thin Lizzy, right? Just they're not doing anything right now.
We don't do that many shows. We play pretty much every other year, do a few festivals. But yeah, it's still ongoing, but it's just not as intense as it was maybe 5 or 6 years ago when the band was touring more.
I remember when Twisted Sister was still together before the passing of their drummer, they would do like 2-3 shows a year. That's it, right? But get crazy festival money. But I remember they had a T-shirt once that said the Twisted Sister World Tour, and it just had one date in America, one date in Europe on the back of the shirt, and that was it. Really
right
smart.
On.
Those guys are fucking amazing. All right, so then we'll move on. I'm just taking like everyone that may not know you, like a trip through your musical history, because then a few years later you start Black Star Riders with a dude that I've loved forever, Robbie Crane, that is your bass player. I believe I know him since the Rat days, and just one of the fucking not only best players but can sing, just fucking super talented. And then that band really takes off so much so that even like 2 years ago you had some big hits, like even all airplay in Europe and here, like it became a, you know, I don't want to say that, like a real band, not just like a side project.
Sure. I mean, we're 8 years into Black Star Riders now. We're just about to record our fifth record. And we didn't know when Scott and I I'd written the songs, decided the right thing to do was not record them under the Lizzie name. And we came up with the idea of Black Star Riders. We didn't know if the fuck it was going to work or if anybody was going to care. You know, we knew we had a good bunch of songs, and we put them out, and the thing just took off. And, you know, it's just got bigger and bigger ever since. And like I said, here we are making the fifth record, and it's great. And Robbie's just, what I say about Robbie, man, he's, as you know, I call him my morale technician, because he's just the funniest guy to have around.
He's one of the fucking coolest dudes in the world.
Being on the road with that guy is a fucking blast. He's always on. He's always positive. He's a hell of a musician. He's just a good dude to be around. And he actually played on a solo record. He's played my last two solo records.
I know that too. We were going to transition to that. But first, you know, here's an interesting...
Sorry.
That's all right. I did shoot question. I realized, you know, with your band here, Blackstone Riders, Blackstone Cherry, Blacktop Mojo, Black Sabbath. What is it with black? Ever so many fucking bands have the word black in it. There are many other colors, James. James, there are other colors.
Yeah, man, but like Pink Sabbath wasn't going to do I mean, I'll form a band called Pink Sabbath, and I'll see if Damien Rice wants to sing with us, and then there that one will come.
I think I take that as a dig to me, James.
That riff isn't as good if it's Pink Sabbath, but I mean, what are you going to do?
Fair enough. So now, with the ability, because, you know, Black Star Riders, you are the singer, you are one of the main songwriters there, like, to say, okay, I know I'm in Thin Lizzy. I know I got Blackstone Riders, and I know I've had a few solo albums already, but let me do a new solo album. Why a solo album? And not put this on a Blackstone, you know what I'm saying? I know the whole story with how it came about with you and Keith, but
right.
was there a plan for a solo album until you met Keith, or no?
Okay. First of all, you're getting your Blackstone Riders and your Blackstone Cherries mixed up. It's Black Star Riders.
Black Star Riders. Sorry, Black Star. It's two letters off.
Yeah. I know. It confuses me sometimes. I was always doing the solo record, Shannon. My first solo record came out in 2003. And, you know, so I was doing the solo thing for 7-8 years before Scott called me to join Lizzy. And I said to Scott, you know, on the downtime, kind of keep working on my solo stuff because it's important to me and I really enjoy it. And he's like, no problem. So it's just a continuation. You know, Black Star Riders is the day job, and I try and work around it with the solo stuff, and that's what I did with this record.
All right, and I guess if Black Star Riders is the day job, Thin Lizzy is the weekend gig, and then the solo
bad, right?
Is your passion project, because it's a fair way to look at it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I write all the time. I'm always writing. I'm always working on stuff. I'm lucky. I seem to have an abundance of material, and you know, I just want to get it out there and let people hear it.
And by the way, I would say this, even though I did fuck up Black Star Riders and Blackstone Riders, Ricky did call me Shannon twice already because he thinks my name is Shannon and not Ralph. So we'll call it an even.
No, dude, we're evil. We're evil and we're equal.
Yeah, we'll call it even. How about that? Is that fair?
I'm so sorry. I'm really embarrassed now.
That's all right. I wasn't going to call it out, but then you call me out.
Why didn't
you?
Well, yeah, let's be honest.
I thought I was mishearing it with his accent. I thought he was saying something else. I was like, it feels like it's my name.
I thought it was an Irish thing.
Shannon, as you know, and it's an Irish name. It can be a boy or a girl, right?
Well, you know, we're in America, my friend.
I know. I've been here 16 years. You think I'd have caught on by now. I know. Yeah, I get it.
Yo, we're all Shannon, all right? That's for you, my girl. We're all Shannon. I'll be Shannon.
Everybody be Shannon. Yeah, a bunch of Shannons.
If you're going to be Shannon, it means you're not going to get laid for a very long time. You don't want to do that, James.
My name's technically Jamie. I've already dealt with this shit my whole life.
That's true, too. All right,
it all started when you called me Richard, Ralph.
Change your fucking Zoom name. And I even said it was weird to me that I see Richard because I know he was Ricky forever.
Ricky, change your Zoom name right now to Shannon. Let's fucking
Shannon
go, Ricky.
Go to Shannon
on a bus. One of us.
Hold on. I was going to try. I can't do it now. It's too complicated. I was gonna. Hold on here. Where is this here?
We can change it.
I can't do it. Yeah, damn it.
Change it to Black Shannon.
Black Shannon. Blackstone Shannon.
All right. Think of it. There's Pink Floyd. Black Floyd would not have been as.
That would cause problems.
I think. Yeah, I think that would have been some issues.
Does that make you feel better now? Now I'm Shannon Sutton on this thing. All right. Is that good?
Well, now you're gonna pressure me, and I'm the one who came up with the gag.
All right. So now. The new solo comes out, right? And this is what I love. Robbie makes it into the new solo record, right? Love Robbie. Yeah. He's done one or before, at least one before, right? But then you get Xavier, who's also one of the coolest fucking drummers ever. I met him backstage at, the Sturgis Rally years ago when he was playing with Buck Cherry. I think it was like his first tour with Buck Cherry. And then the whole Keith Nelson story that I heard really made me laugh because, correct me if I'm wrong, You tried to get him to join Black Star Riders, and he said, I'm not going to join the band, but I'm going to come meet you anyway. And then that started a friendship. Is that right?
That's exactly how it happened. You know, he was suggested to us by Richard Fortus from Guns N' Roses. I knew who Keith was, obviously, but I never met him. Got his number, called him up, and arranged. We met in Barney's Beanery, you know, at 11 o'clock one morning, and he came in. The first thing out of his mouth was, I'm not the right guy for you. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing here then? You know, what's going on? What's, you know, what are you selling? And he just said, look, I love the band, and out of respect, you know, for the call and you thinking of me, I just thought I'd come down and tell you that. He said, I just don't really want to tour that much anymore, but I'm writing, I'm producing, I have a studio. Why don't you come over and let's see if we can work on a couple of songs? And it just spiraled from there, and we just hit it off. Chemistry was great. He has an insane collection of vintage guitars that I fell in love with. And yeah, that was it.
So was that collaboration what made you spark the fire for a solo record? Had you not been thinking of one at that point?
I was working on it. I still hadn't really decided who I was going to, you know, produce it with. But when we went in the studio, we wrote the song Fighting Heart, which is on the record. And we did a demo of it, and I took it home and I went, man, this is really cool. I mean, I should see if this guy wants to write some more. So anyway, I called him up and I just said, look, I got a ton of ideas for a solo record. He went, let me co-produce it with you. And I went, done. And that was it.
That's cool. And he's just he's a very good dude. Just a really, really cool dude.
Absolutely.
The title of the record is When Life Was Hard and Fast. And when I first heard that and first heard the first single, the title track, I thought you were implying the days of 80s rock, like the old fun, hard and fast rock and roll days. But it's more about growing up where you grew up. Right. So, and I heard you say something once about how you different people will interpret things in lyrics differently. So it's a very good example. I thought, oh, cool. Obviously, listening to the music, it feels like a nod to old school, and that's the title, but it has nothing to do with that.
Right. No, I wrote the lyrics with a really old friend of mine called Sam Robinson, and we're both from East Belfast. And we just wrote about growing up as kids in East Belfast in the 70s and 80s, obviously with the situation that was going on over there. You know, and we'd just get kicked out of the house, and we'd play on the streets, and we'd get into all kinds of trouble. It's pre-cell phone, pre-internet. And I just like the way things just happened there. There wasn't any of that like you have now, like you're tweeting somebody or you're texting somebody going, I'm 5 minutes away. Make sure you're there. I'm outside the door. I'm coming in now. You know, people didn't show up. You met other people or you just went random stuff. Random shit used to happen all the time. And I think we kind of lost that a little bit. And so it was just writing about that and then our hopes and our aspirations about what we wanted to be when we grew up, trying to get out of Belfast, trying to see the world. You know, sometimes just looking back to move forwards, I guess.
Do you go back once
in
a while?
As much as I can.
You do?
As much as I can, yeah.
These days, obviously, I hate to always ask this question, but, you know, we are still somewhat in the thick of it all with COVID. Obviously, you can't travel right now. How has it been affecting you? Have you been writing more? Have you been losing your mind? How has it been affecting you?
I mean, all of the above. Yeah, I've been writing tons. Working in my studio here, you know, working on some new BSR stuff, working on some new stuff with Keith, writing some stuff for other people, just trying to stay busy. But you know, the traveling's killed me. This is the first year I've not been able to get back to Ireland since I can't remember, you know. Right. And you know, I even lost my mother at the start of the year, and I couldn't fly back for the funeral, and that was just horrendous because of everything that was going on. Yeah, it's, you know, but it is what it is, and it's bigger than any of us, and you just got to accept it and fucking deal with it.
And the one thing that I think is really nice is you can see that you've been keeping your local pillow store in business, which is nice.
My wife has been keeping our local pillow store. I have nothing to do with the decorations in our house whatsoever because my artistic merit when it comes to stuff like that is shit.
Okay, fair enough.
I think they're very rock and roll, man. I just want you to know
thank you, man. Wow. I appreciate that. I'm glad
James and I seldom disagree, but you know what, James?
They're not too Damien Rice for you, no?
They're not Damien Rice enough, apparently. Next time, I mean, I wish I could bring mine. I have a leopard like that because I keep the 80s alive here, Ralph. You'd be impressed with mine. It really looks like
your
Winger decorated
pillow?
My room. Yeah.
I don't know if we'd be bragging about that. I don't know.
I have a glittery pillow.
Yeah, glittery pillow, though, seems more modern and cool. I don't know. I think of our backgrounds, well, I think Ricky's background probably looks the nicest. Let's be honest.
I like his the best. That's awesome.
Yours looks, if we're gonna rank backgrounds, I think
very heartbroken. I mean, look at the effort I put for this hodgepodge.
Yeah. Yours is nice and neat, James. I'll give you credit.
Look at this. I got Hot Wheels. I'm 43 in a week. I got Led Zeppelin Hot Wheels because I get laid a lot. Look at this.
All right, before we go any further, one of our longtime sponsors, and I know Shannon's a fan, It is Yo Kratom, YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo high quality kratom. None of this, you know, gas station garbage. This is high quality at YoKratom.com. Shannon, as a Kratom fan, have you ever dabbled in the shitty garbage like gas station quality? Like, oh my God, what am I doing? I got to go back to Yo Kratom.
I have. Early on in the quarantine, I didn't know. I couldn't go to the usual place. So I had to just kind of experiment, and it wasn't great. And thankfully, I found out that Yo Kratom was still open during the pandemic. So I ordered from them, and I'm like, it's probably going to take weeks because it was at the period of time where Amazon wasn't even delivering. Mm-hmm. And it was in my house. I was in my house in like 2 to 3 days. And they have every single strain that you can want. They have powders, tinctures, capsules. They have everything a Kratom user could want.
And I know you like one that's like a hybrid one of a mixture of a bunch of them, right? That's your favorite one?
Yeah, it's like an accumulation of, I always forget if it's 11 or 21, but it's several different strains all combined into one called Trainwreck. So it's a proprietary blend that you can't get anywhere else.
Right. And that's all at YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. They've been a sponsor of the network forever. So support the people that support the network, and it's YoKratom.com. All right, let's get back into it. All right. So then, Ricky, one other thing I liked a lot, because so we had the lead singer of Styx, Dennis DeYoung, on the show last year, right? And we were talking about Babe and how he recorded it as a demo for his wife, but yeah, it sounded so good, they could never get that vibe again. So the song we all love and know from the record was a demo he recorded that they just threw on the album. And then I heard you say two of the songs on the album are demos that you just could not recreate, so you put demos on the record.
It happens. I mean, you know, what you're doing is you're capturing, really, when you're making a record, you're capturing a moment, you're capturing a feeling, where you're at in your life. That's the way I look at it anyway. And the two songs in question, one was Time Don't Seem to Matter, which I wrote for my daughter, my youngest daughter, Pepper. And I went in with Keith to do the demo of it that day, and I had like a stinking head cold. And Keith says, oh, let's do a demo of Time Don't Seem to Matter. I went, man, I don't really want to sing. I'm not feeling that good. He says, it's a demo. Nobody's going to hear it. Don't worry about it. Just, we'll throw up a mic. We'll just sing it. So I sang it and I played it. And we kind of listened back. I went, oh, that's pretty cool. Voice doesn't sound too bad. In fact, the head cold gave it that sort of Barry White deep resonance that, you know, you get when you're sort of sick. And, you know, we tried to recreate it when we came to record the album. We just couldn't do it. We couldn't get the vibe that we had that day. And mm-hmm. So I sort of said to Keith, are we going with the demo? And he went, yeah. And then the other song is Clown of Misery. It's actually one I sang into my iPhone, just the idea. Sending it to Keith, and Keith was like, it's done. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's done. It's an iPhone demo, bro. You need to get in and we need to do it properly. And he says, no, I said, this has something, the desperation. He said, we could, you know, we could mess with this a little bit and make it sound like an old Hank Williams or Woody Guthrie 78 from the 40s, crackly. And that's what he did. And it was a great call on his part.
That's pretty wild. That's crazy. Like, we had the singer of Wolf Mother on a couple weeks ago. And yeah, he had someone from Fiverr produce one of their songs just for the hell of it. And then they decided to release that. So it's just, it's crazy when you're recording a song on an iPhone. I mean, technology has definitely changed the world, and it is pretty fascinating what you're able to do now. Because what you just did, go back to when you had the first Almighty record, would have cost $100,000. And now you're doing it on an iPhone. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. You'd be spending, you know, 20, 30 grand just on doing demos back in the day. Never mind a record, you know?
It's totally nuts. So now a couple other questions that I know we're going to have you play live. One of the interesting things is that there's a great lineup of guest talent on this record. And one of them being who I don't even know how many fucking bands at this point have told me this dude is their mentor, and it's Joe Elliott from Def Leppard. Over and over again, bands tell us how nice and giving with his time and advice and whatever. So not only is he singing backup vocals on you, but you guys have been friends forever too.
Yeah, I mean, I was Joe's best man at his wedding, you know, 15, 16 years ago. He's been one of my biggest allies, probably my best friend, one of my biggest mentors. I mean, you can't really argue with a guy that sold 150 million records, right?
Right.
You know, I'm always sending him ideas. I'm always working on stuff with him because I just value his input. He's brutally honest. If something's shit, he'll tell me it's shit. Or if I can do better, he'll say you can do, you know. He produced the first two solo records. I moved back to Ireland in the late 90s, and I was there for about 8 or 9 years before I moved to the States. And Joe lives in Dublin. And I moved to Dublin. So we met, we hit it off, and we were big fans of soccer. So we're hanging out every other night watching the soccer up at his place. And he's just a good, solid dude, a total music junkie, never forgotten his working class roots. And I love him to bits. He's been really good to me over the years.
Yeah, it's really wild. I mean, to hear, I don't know how many times I've heard that story.
Yeah, he's a solid guy.
You know, Def Leppard, the guys, I forget who it was, Tesla said it to us, or someone else, yeah. a few bands have said it to us that they rely on Joe Elliott's mentorship, which is pretty crazy.
No, I mean, those guys took me out on the road when they did the X tour in 2000. They took me out for over a year, just me solo acoustic. You know, let me ride on the bus with them. You know, it was insane. You know, and the exposure I got for that was just incredible. And they didn't have to do that, and they did. And the whole band are just great people.
And you know that on my old radio show, when I first interviewed all of Def Leppard, I asked them who had the biggest penis in the band, and they all pointed to the drummer, every single one of them.
Really?
Yeah, they all said.
I don't even know what to say about that.
Yeah, it wasn't even a question. They all just went, "Yeah, Rick has the penis."
Straight away. Yeah.
Not even like a hesitation. It was like it was almost like they knew I was going to ask the question, James.
Yes, I believe Rocket was about that. Yeah. We all thought it was about glam rock, you know, glitter rock in the 70s. Yeah. Not dog. It's about the drummer's pee-pee, baby.
Hog. Yeah, and also Dizzy Reed's on the band, on the album, and even you have one of your daughters singing a track on the record as well, singing back, right? That's pretty cool. Yep. How long have you known Dizzy?
Oh, again, years and years. I met Dizzy through Del James, who works for Guns, has been working with Guns for years, and I co-wrote a couple of gun songs on the Use Your Illusion album. Dale and I are great friends, and I met Dizzy through Dale, and then I actually played and co-wrote a track on Dizzy's solo record a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's just, these people are, you know, they're friends first and foremost, but they just happen to be insanely talented friends, which is wonderful.
And it's funny because all of you guys, like Dizzy and a few of the other, you all seem like, to still to this day, I would put Gilby Clark in this group too. You're like living and breathing rock and roll every day of your lives. You're not some puss like me in this goofy shirt. Like, you guys look rock and roll. I don't look rock and roll, James. I never did.
That's okay, man. You just got to be who you is. Look, you can't. This is big steps for you. I'm not a therapist.
But Shannon was about to shit on me. Shannon, go ahead.
No, when you had your long hair, I've seen pictures. I feel like you appeared to be rock and roll.
Yeah, back then when I had my hair down to my ass. But I never got, once it became more badass with tattoos and stuff, you know, I never fell into that world. I was much more of a Def Leppard kind of rock and roll than I was a, you know, badass Guns N' Roses tattooed kind of guy. I was more of a Damien Rice rock and roll. Let's put it that way.
I just,
dude, that guy's sitting somewhere in Ireland right now with his ears on fire.
I mean, I just, so you know, I am, there's only two or three bands I am on their mailing list, and he's one of them where I will go see him wherever he plays.
He's a great artist. He was a good singer-songwriter.
Ralph, I just realized that you're interviewing, this is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, and you're interviewing in a Nike workout shirt. That's mad rock and roll. That's,
I was on a run this morning because I got fat during COVID, and now I'm trying to lose weight.
I think it's great. Look, I did an interview once with Phil Anselmo, and he was wearing Adidas. So there you go.
It showed you that the more badass you are, the less you have to prove it. There you go. All right. Shannon can't even agree slightly with that.
Tony Ioni is wearing a New Balance tracksuit right now.
He's wearing a nightgown. That's how mad, man, fucking mad rock and roll he is. And then also, and then we'll get into you playing. One of the guys you don't really associate too much with badass rock and roll, unless you're a real fan of his whole career, Andy from Duran Duran is involved as well.
Yeah. Andy produced an Almighty album way back in the day, and we've been friends ever since. And like you said, if you know Andy, he's a real rocker. Like, his favorite band's AC/DC. He's a hell of a guitar player. He's a great singer. And, you know, we just kept in touch. And I co-wrote some. He's got a solo record coming out later this year, and I co-wrote a bunch of songs with him on that. And I just asked him to return the favor, and he just rips a killer solo on one of the tracks on the record.
That's so cool to get. I mean, it seems like you must be a nice guy. All these guys are your friends for life. It's just pretty crazy. You know, it's pretty wild that you've all stayed intertwined.
Either that, I owe the money. No, I've been doing this. I've been doing this such a long time. I've been really blessed to meet a lot of killer people that I'm fans of and have inspired me, and they've become my friends. And it's a good thing. It's great.
That's pretty wild. So we're gonna have you play a song live. You want to tell us what song it's gonna be?
Yeah, it's the title track of the album, "When Life Was Hard and Fast," on acoustic guitar.
Dope.
Together along a rainless road, in a land of blood and thunder, where evil genius strode.
rock and roll is how we dreamed of. And girls who didn't care. And our teachers tried to tell us it wouldn't get us anywhere. No one tried to tell me underneath the blood red moon. The faces in the picture would fade away so soon. No one tried to mention that today could be the last. No one had to worry what life was having passed. So how you gonna keep me working on this farm when I can see the road ahead? It's tattooed on my arm. Never sleep with girls named Ruby. Don't mess with guys called Joe. I'm gonna make this street sing in a traveling circus show. No one tried to tell me underneath the blood red. Faces in the picture would fade away so soon. No one tried to mention that today could be the last. No one had to worry when that was happening fast. Small town heroes, way too much to say. Life it taught its lessons, like there's no heat from the moon. Shadow in the rear view, it's gonna overtake you soon. No one tried to tell me underneath the blood red moon. The faces in the picture would fade away so soon. That today could be the last. No one had to worry when life was at its best. When life was at its best.
All right, there it is, the acoustic version from the brand new album, When Life Was Hard and Fast. That is the title track. Ricky, really awesome stuff. I have a couple of other questions for you, and then we're going to wrap up with the first. But so if you were one of the people that bought the early pre-release, it came with a second album called Stairwell Troubadour, which is all covers, right? Mm-hmm. And are various covers from around your, you know, rock and roll covers, things that make sense. But there was one that jumped out at me that I had to go listen to. And I have to say, I liked it way more than I thought I would like it. And that would be the Britney Spears cover of Oops, I Did It Again. How the fuck did that even come about? Was it done on a dare? Why would it make it to the tracks? Just the whole story behind it, I need to know.
Well, this album was recorded about 6 years ago. It was recorded part of a Kickstarter VIP thing for my last album campaign, limited release. And my youngest daughter was very little at the time. She's 5 or 6, and she was singing that song constantly. That was her favorite song. And I learned it to play it to her. You know, I'd play it on the guitar and I'd play it to her. And I just thought, hang on a minute, this is actually a really cool fucking song. You know, if you break this down and play it as like a folk rock song and have some Neanderthal tattooed Irish guy singing it, it's funny, you know? And that's just really where it came from. I just did it and just thought it'd make people laugh. And I've actually played it live a few times. I remember playing it in Nottingham in England in a solo acoustic show, and the room was just full of, it was a biker kind of festival thing. It was just full of bikers, and getting, you know, 500 bikers to sing along to Oops, I Did It Again by Britney Spears is a memory I will take to my grave with me.
I was watching one of the acoustic performance somewhere, and you could tell people were like, wait a minute, I know this song, but what's going on? And then when chorus came in, yeah, it was interesting to watch. And I was like, oh yeah, it kind of fucking works. It's pretty cool. I like it.
Song slaps, you know, slaps.
Were you going to do circus? Like, was there other ones that almost made it to the list, or any other weird covers that you've ever tried working on?
There's the Dead or Alive one on there. You know, you spend me.
Yeah, but like other bands have covered that rock wise. Right. The guy from Law and Order who was in a band called Uranium 235. They did like a industrial rock cover of that. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Right on.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. No, I think that's where it ended.
Nothing from Mandy Moore coming down the pipeline.
No. If you're going to do one bubblegum pop song, pick one and do it well, right?
All right. Well, it is a cool take. And that does that only – so if you're buying the – it said originally if you pre-record it, you got that record. Is there a way to get that record now? Is it on RickyWarwick.com if someone wants
– It's available with the deluxe CD version of the new album. So if you buy the deluxe CD version of the album, you'll get the bonus disc.
Okay, that's pretty cool. I'm trying to tell you, it's worth it for that track alone to surprise your friends to hear the rock and roll version of it. And now, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, a couple of these songs, they do feel like – I mean, listen, you know, I'm going to say a tertiary listen. I try to listen a little bit of everything. There feels like some Motown vibe in your soul.
Oh, man. Yeah, well spotted.
Yeah, is that something that's near and dear to you? You don't associate Ireland with Motown.
You don't. Northern Soul and Motown, you know, Levi Stubbs, one of my favorite vocalists of all time. I don't know. I just love the playing and the feel and the power and the soul that's in that music. And I can't get enough of it. You know, I mean, it's really inspirational to me I'm going to admit, I steal a lot from the Motown and from the Northern Soul. And you add that, those melodies are so strong, and you turn up the guitars, you have something. I mean, it's quite a few times a song by Black Star Riders, Testify or Say Goodbye, is a complete, you know, ripoff of that Northern Soul feel, that beat and that backbeat. And that, you know, it's incredible. I love it. I love the music.
I mean, hey, us white people have been stealing black people's culture for years. Why do we need to stop now? Let's do it. You know, we're all on board.
You know, David Ruffin, The Temptations. Oh, it's just incredible stuff. You know, I just, you know, get a few drinks in me and I'll be up on the floor doing my bad dad dance into that stuff.
I'm a big fan. I grew up, my mother was a huge fan of Motown. So I grew up like really deeply ensconced in the world of Motown. I'm a big fan of that. A good word, Shannon, ensconced, just so you know. all right. So I want to do the first, but before I do, James, I feel like you had like a couple times where you did one of these. We wanted to ask something. I always feel bad that I shut you down, James.
First of all, never. You're so outstanding at this. It's a pleasure to watch the research. I feel like if you interviewed me, you know shit I don't even know about myself. That's like, how good.
I know your RR hat stands for your favorite restaurant in Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, grilled cheese. I mean, it shows how great my palate is. They just shove new shit into a grilled cheese, and it's exciting. I think I had a one-liner at one point where I was going to run the black whatever band joke to the ground, but we've done that. And I had a couple more Damien Rice's, but look, this isn't Saturday Night Live. I don't do the same joke 100 times in a row. Right. I'm done with this.
Let me ask
shit.
You this though, James, they looks to be, I'm sure they're not comic books, but right behind you, there looks like two things that are wrapped in plastic.
Okay. So for my podcast, when I'm in town, I need like a cool wall for like my videos. And so my producer just said, throw whatever up. And, I was looking one day to make it look better, and all I had, my aunt years ago gave me wrestling magazines. And I'm like,
so they're magazines.
So I got the Macho Man and Ric Flair. I got Paul Pierce of the Celtics. I got Neil Young, Monty Python, Kiss, Iggy Pop, and Led Zeppelin cars. I mean, come on. Ladies, I am available.
Yeah,
whatever.
Nothing, yeah, very obvious as screaming single man who hasn't had sex in a long time.
Oh, I don't know about that, buddy. I mean, if you want to go into that, I have a story. But
How about in that room?
Well, not in this room. Oh, and I got these Funkos. What do you think of this? I got the Jaws Funko. Look at this.
That's nice. Bring that over here. Can you bring that? It looks cute. Oh, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah, I'm that's the good. Best. Yo, I did get laid a few weeks ago, but she's a QAnon person. So I don't know if we want to get into that.
I love it. I dated a flat earther.
They're, I don't want to speak for all of them, but if you believe in all that stuff, like this girl believes in lizard people.
Love it.
She banged like she believed in lizard people. That's all I'm awesome. Gonna say, dude. Like,
but did you get laid, or did she just make you think that you got laid?
Good question.
Well, she left me some breadcrumbs, Ricky, and they implied that there was a ring going on where I could get.
You totally got laid, right? Yeah.
Well, you know that the reason why I was a little late today because I was up for the laser in space. Us Jews, you know, we went up there and I was fixing the argon laser.
Oh man, you know,
the super Jew laser.
Here's my knickknack. I have this skull mask. That's nice.
That's a good look.
That's cool. That's badass. Yeah, I like that.
It's a motorcycle mask. I don't have a motorcycle, but it came free with an order one day.
Well, say you said you weren't rock. You weren't metal. Look at you.
This is my favorite one. Ready? This is me.
All right.
Excellent.
Okay, there we go. All right, so let's do the first, Shannon.
The first time ever I saw concert.
All right, the name of the show, as you know, Ricky, is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. We ask every guest since the dawn of time for their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, meaning the first concert you ever went to, but ideally something we're going to know, not something that some local Belfast band that we're like, who the fuck is that? And if it's Damien Rice, I'll be really happy. But let's hear who it is.
Yeah.
It's not Damien Rice, but it is a local Belfast band. But I think you might have heard of this local Belfast band. I hope so. A band called Stiff Little Fingers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of them. I don't know them well, but I do know the name.
Yeah.
So, 13 years old, I'm living in the sticks just outside Belfast. It is the height of the troubles. You know, there's bombs going off. There's British soldiers in the streets. It's right at the height. We're in carnage. I'm not allowed to go into Belfast at night. There's a bit of a curfew going on. Stiff Little Fingers are playing. I've become obsessed with the first two records. Me and my friend hatch up a plan to go into Belfast. We sneak out. We say we're going to soccer practice or something. We get the bus into Belfast, shitting ourselves, just with all the soldiers and everything that's going on. Start shitting ourselves in even more when we see 2,000 hardcore punks lined up outside the Ulster Hall in Belfast to go into this gig. And I walk into this gig, and Stiff Little Fingers hit the stage, and it's the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. And I just stood there, terrified, because it's going off all around me. There's bottles breaking, there's all these punks moshing and all this kind of shit, and you know, just terrifying but completely exhilarated at the same time. I walk out of that gig, and I had a paper round at the time, and I just went back home the next day, and I said to my dad, I went, I need to get an electric guitar. Can you lend me the the 20 extra bucks that I need to buy the guitar? And he went, you went to the gig last night, didn't you?
That's so fucking cool.
And I went, yeah. And he went, how do you know? He says, I just fucking know. And bless him, he lent me the money for the guitar. But that band started, they changed my life. I mean, I went in as a kid and I came back out with like a vision and a focus and what I wanted to be and what I wanted to do.
So at 13, at that point, had you even ever held a guitar?
Yeah, I had a like beat up acoustic guitar that, you know, I tried to play a few chords on and, you know, your fingers hurt and I wasn't interested in the lessons. That the three or four lessons I had were boring and, you know, you play Kumbaya so many fucking times and you're like, really, what am I doing? But that just suddenly, the volume and the whole, and Stiff Little Fingers sang about growing up in Belfast. They sang about what was going on. And it's like, you know, 13, 14 years old, I could relate to all that, about the fact there was nothing to do. I mean, you know, they used to chain the swings up in the parks on a Sunday to stop you from swinging on the swings on the fucking park. Oh, there was nothing to do. And it was just total boredom and not many bands would come. So it was always the Irish bands that would play, you know, like obviously Thin Lizzy, U2, Stiff Little Fingers, Undertones. Our own bands would play regularly. But it was funny if a band like, say, if a big international band would come over, say it was like Fleetwood Mac, you'd get like 400 punks going to see Fleetwood Mac just because it was a fucking band playing
something
in Belfast.
Something to do. Yeah, that's so wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's crazy. Imagine, James, go back to that year, like it's like probably 82, something like that, 81, like that. Me walking there in my Nike running shirt, trying to be cool. Just imagine that.
Oh,
what
dude,
would
you'd fit right in. We call them, there's kids that hang out there now, we call them spides in Belfast. And their whole thing is the Nike shell suits that they wear, and the baseball caps pulled down. You see them on the street corners.
All right,
you'd be fine.
That's good to know. Thank God, I have my place to hide. Okay, so now the first drug you ever did after weed, unless you've never done anything harder than weed.
The first drug probably. I mean, I'm trying to remember about this was probably speed because it was cheap, and we were punks and we were into, you know, being on and being in your face and going to gigs, and the bands that I were in were all punk bands. So there was a lot of speed about, and that was probably the first drug. The first one I can ever really, I can't even remember the first time. The first time I took ecstasy is probably a better story.
Let's hear it. I like that.
You know, we the Almighty, as I said, we came from this little village outside Glasgow called Straven, real small village. And we'd had some success. We'd been on Top of the Pops and had the hit albums in the UK. And we'd all gone home for Christmas. And we were around somebody's house and the ecstasy came out. And, you know, I'd never done it. And of course, you know, you come up on it, you're starting to feel pretty good. And somebody suggests, it's Christmas Eve, let's go to the pub. All right, it's fucking snowing. It's in Scotland, it's snowing. So we walk down to the pub. It's about 7, 8 o'clock at night. We're really coming up on this ecstasy, starting to feel kind of good. There's a fucking line outside the pub waiting to get in, a mile long. This is our local pub, but still, you got to wait your turn. There's a big guy on the door who's a bouncer. His name is Jim. Known him for years. And we're standing in the line, and a couple of other guys in the band there and some of our friends, we're all buzzing on ecstasy. And this guy goes, and he says, Ricky, just fucking go down to the front of the line and just tell Jim, you know, to jump the line. Just,
right.
You know, you know, people know you in this town now. You know, you can just fuck. I went, nah, I don't really feel it, because, you know, I was all like, I'm cool, I'll just hang here, it's going to be fine, you know. But like, come on, we're freezing to death. Just fucking jump the line. Go to the front of the line. So, of course, I walked down the front of the line, and Jim's there on the door, and he goes, all right, Ricky. I went, Jim, how's it going? He goes, we don't even let fucking rock stars jump the fucking line, mate. And of course, I had to do the walk of shame back to the back of the line.
Fucking great.
And this guy in the line just got, as I'm walking back, this guy in the line goes, hey, write a song about that, you big fucking prick.
Awesome.
The buzz was gone, man. I mean, ecstasy or no ecstasy, I wasn't feeling particularly good at that point.
That is fucking great. That is perfect. Fucking great. It would have been also cooler if you actually did write a song about it the day you couldn't budge the line.
That's the walk fucking of shame, you know, the head done. Write a song
about
that.
Oh, my God. That is fucking awesome. That makes me so happy. I don't know why that makes me happy to know that rock stars, you know, get shit on once in a while, too.
Boom. Right back to the door.
And did you wait and go in, or did you just leave?
Of course
at that
we
point?
Did. Yeah, you know. Well, like that, going back in, my night was ruined. You know, I was never going to recover from that, no matter what happened. It's like, you know, it was game over.
That's fucking great. I fucking love it. All right, now the first time you had sex.
Oh man, that was pretty spectacular. Actually, I was a late starter,
mm-hmm.
17.
That's about average old. On the show, just so you know. It's about average on the show.
And funnily, the pub I just mentioned was connected as well.
Was it Jim?
No, it wasn't Jim, no. Fuck no. That's brilliant. We used to drink in there, and we drink in there underage. We did fake IDs, and I was about 17 at the time, and one of my mates had this incredible sister who worked for British Airways. And she was about 21, 22, so she was older.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the pub one night, and she just comes over and she joins us and has a drink with us and starts kind of hitting on me. And I'm sort of naive, thinking, no way could this woman be interested in me. I'm a spotty 17-year-old kid, you know. Anyway, long story short, we go back to my buddy's house, and this is a fucking true story. I crash out on the couch. 2 hours later, she walks in, just going to work, you know, she's whatever shift she's on, with the British Airways uniform on, gets on top of me on the couch. I'm like porn magazines are true, everything you read about it really does fucking happen.
not even to see if you were awake.
She woke me up, and you know, just was like, and I was like, fuck yeah, this is amazing.
That is fucking good shit. Did you get some frequent flyer miles?
But yeah, so that was the first time, which was pretty spectacular.
That's pretty wild.
Every time after that's been shit.
Was it a one-off, or did you end up hanging out with her a little bit after that?
It happened a few times, you know, after that. And yeah, it was, I didn't know what had hit me. Quite literally.
And because of that, now every girl you bang has to wear a stewardess outfit to make sure that you can come through it.
Yeah, you know, that may be in the mix somewhere.
And then we, you know, Gilby Clark suggested this, and we've been asking the rock stars this along the way. The first time he called the term rock star sex, meaning the first time you got laid because you knew, oh, this girl knows I'm in a band, and that's why we're having sex. You know what I mean? Like, she saw you on stage. Gilby told the story where he got off stage and there was just a girl waiting in his dressing room on her knees.
Yeah.
You know? So like where it was like, oh, this is because I just finished the gig.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that definitely started to happen when the Almighty started to get successful. There was certain, there's people just backstage at gigs and you know.
No, the first time doesn't jump out, but it just was a lot of it back then is what you're saying.
Yeah. You just knew. I mean, I get married to my first wife quite early on. So I tried to be good for quite a while. And, that lasted about a week. And it was the early 90s, right? You know, it was just,
Did you get married before that Almighty hit with that with Free and Easy when you guys exploded in America?
I got married right about that time.
That is just stupid.
Very young. And very, very silly, yes.
Yeah, well, all right. Well,
what a surprise. It didn't last.
Yeah, big shock there. All right, so the new album, When Life Was Hard and Fast, is out now. You can go to rickywarwick.com. You could do the double album CD and get that great Britney Spears cover. Follow you at Ricky Warwick on Twitter. I don't like that you don't have social symmetry because your Instagram is like official Ricky Warwick or something like that, which I don't like when it's not the same everywhere. But and we're going to play a song of the week, but anything else you want to plug before we wrap this up, Ricky?
No, thank you so much for having me, guys. It's been a blast. And, please just check out the new album, When Life Is Hard and Fast.
Okay, James, your plugs, please. Oh, wait, you know what? Let's do it the other way around this time. Shannon, your plugs first.
Thank you. Follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
I imagine that a guy from Belfast, I'm going to say you do believe in ghosts. Am I right, Ricky, or no?
Yeah, I do. I didn't for a long time, and then something happened, and it changed my whole – and I do.
All right, well, don't tell me that. Shannon will pilfer our guests once in a while, so I'll loop you two together, and you could go on and tell the ghost story on her show.
I would love to.
Every guest that makes the mistake of saying, yes, they believe in ghosts, I steal from my show.
Yeah, it's totally fine.
No, thank you. It's a pretty cool story. I'd love to tell it.
Yay. Don't tell it now. Okay, and I also imagine growing up in Belfast, you have a hell of a lot of fucking fighting stories, too. So then you got two down.
Well, the story he didn't say before about wanting to take the equipment out the back at Limelight, I assume that ended in a fight. I would love to hear that.
It did.
Okay.
All right, great. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. So now
it didn't end very well for us either. There's a bunch of big guys.
If I recall, Almighty only played Limelight once, so I figured out how that went down.
Right.
All right, James, your turn.
Okay. First of all, this has been the best. This is the greatest. We're all Shannon. Okay. So first, my podcast, Commissioner Comedy. It is me talking about the unspoken rules and the passion of comedy. I guarantee you, you listen to this, it'll change your life. You'll do push-ups. You'll go form 8 bands. You'll get side gigs. You'll do whatever. I mean, it's some real shit. The last episode I recorded was me talking about playing on a subway. I recorded before and after. It's dope. Go to The James Madden on Instagram, The James Madden. Also, you got to follow that because some shit's dropping. April, my new album comes out. It's called Check Spot. It's me doing a question and answer while people pay their bills. They said it was crazy. They're right, but it's fucking cool. And I have a musical thing, one song coming out April 2nd. I can't tell you the full things, but it's me with a band. It's interesting. It's coming the fuck out. So April's a big month for me. I might be too big for this show. Ralph, I might be having lobster for breakfast, dog.
It better not be a Damien Rice cover. I want some credit for that.
Yo, man, I'm in cahoots with Damien Rice, dog.
All right, just follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast, The Good Sugar Podcast, which is the health and wellness podcast, comes out every Monday. My book that reached the top 100 on Amazon. Thank you so much for everyone that bought that crazy, stupid book. And just follow me over at I Am Ralph Sutton. We end the show every week with a song of the week. I'm going to do the other track on the album that I liked a lot called You Don't Love Me. And it's from this dude right here. Go to thestrshow.com/playlist. When Life Was Hard and Fast is the album. Ricky, honestly, it was a lot of fun having you on, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
We'll see you next week on the STR Show. Peace.
Sure. I saw it coming. You've been listening to the SDR Show.